Today's program was brought to you by the Brooklyn Kitchen, a mom-and-pop operation since 2006. They provide the tools that shape our food culture. Visit them at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or visit thebrooklynkitchen.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Fumette About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette, and we're your co-host of Fumette About It, which you can hear live every Monday evening at 7 p.m. on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Or archived at the same website and on iTunes. Today in the studio, we're going to talk about cider. So when people ask me how long I've been brewing, usually I say 2001, but you recently remembered and reminded. I had a terrible flashback the other day while drinking something very interesting. I actually the first thing I ever fermented was cider. I went to a boarding arts high school in Interlochen, Michigan, and we couldn't get stuff at the stores. I ended up going to a farmer's market, getting a jug of cider, and then we spit in it, threw it in the closet, and a few weeks later we had cider. Don't do that. But it's fun. Anyway,
what did that taste like? Did it ferment?
I wasn't an experienced cider drinker at the time.
It was drinkable.
It was drinkable. The point was not really the flavor at that time, It was like, music got us far, but that fermented beverage got us further sometimes. Anyway, we're here in the studio with two of our really, really good friends and cider makers, Chris Prout and Ben Carr.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So we had a very good experience. I made cider the first time a couple of years ago, just a few small batches, and I did some unusual yeast treatments. I think I did a champagne yeast. A friend of mine had done an Orval clone, he gave me some of his drugs, so I used that. So I made three different types. And then I I used wild. Oh, I know what I did. I got an organic apple from the green market, peeled it, and then cultured, put that into some organic apple cider fresh from the green market, and cultured some wild yeast off of that, basically, and then made a starter with this organic apple peel and cider, and then put that into my cider. So another one was like a wild, spontaneously fermented cider. And those actually turned out pretty nice. I kept them around for a while. The champagne was definitely the cleanest. The Orval clone kind of got that weird, like, stinky feet thing going on that you get in some sours eventually. But they were interesting, and they're all very drinkable. And then Chris and I just did a cider experiment that we started last fall. We just tasted those. So we did five different we just got 1 gallon jugs of a nice, fresh-pressed organic cider from Westchester County?
It's definitely Westchester County, but the name is totally escaping me.
Yeah. Anyway, we got those fresh. We went up there early one Saturday morning, and we did five different yeast treatments. So we did one spontaneously, so no yeast added. Champagne yeast, we did White Labs cider yeast, Y yeast cider yeast, and then this MA33, which is a wine yeast that I had read about in a cider book that I downloaded recently. And then we did 4 2.5 gallon carboys, the smaller, better bottles.
I think we're getting way ahead of ourselves for the moment.
I know, but I'm just saying this. So this is what we've been playing with. Absolutely. So our interest is kind of peaked now, and we were very fortunate to join Chris in his backyard in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, for a cider pressing day. That was late last fall, right? I don't even remember what day that was.
I think it was in November.
Yeah, and so we had a ton of fun doing that. So anyway, here we are, finally in March, talking about cider with Chris and Ben. And anyway, I'm very excited.
And we know you guys through one of our local homebrew clubs, the Brooklyn Bruisers, which you guys are active members of. When do they meet?
The first Monday of every month.
First Monday of every month. Yeah. Where?
At Browery Lane.
At Browery Lane. So if you're in New York and you want to join an awesome homebrew club, come on down.
Yeah, we always have to. We always come late. We never, because we have the show at 7 on the same Monday. But we tried to head there afterward. Always, it's always a good time. You guys have a lot of good brewers in your group. A lot of people making interesting stuff. So
yeah, we welcome all skill sets. I mean, anybody that hasn't made beer before is welcome. Anybody that's made beer for years is welcome. So we like to bring everybody into the conversation.
Yeah.
Speaking of conversation, you guys have been having conversations about beer for so long. Why cider, and when did you get into it? And how? What? what's going on? So when we met you, when we hung out for that cider day, tell us about that Saturday. Okay. Give us a recap and how it started. It was nuts. It was awesome.
Yeah, in my backyard, in my apartment in Brooklyn, Greenpoint, we had our second cider pressing party. I guess it was about 8 bushels of apples that we pressed. Something did go wrong. The press ended up breaking at that cider pressing party, but we had the help of some new good friends that we met through Mary and Chris the next week to finally get all the apples pressed. And my experience is, you know, this is my second season, really. And when you press apples, you have to be, you know, you don't get apples all year. You get them in the fall when they're ripe and ready. And you're sort of, you know, that's when you press them.
Right. Yeah.
So you have, Chris has this wonderful, I think it's a wonderful setup, especially considering, I mean, you live in an apartment, you have a great backyard, and you have a shed, so you have some storage space, which not everybody has here in New York City, but you have had constructed, you took like a table that's on wheels, like a stainless steel base table with a wood top, you cut out, and you installed a garbage disposal in the middle, and then you have that feeding into your press, right? A cider press, which you also purchased. I mean, it's a hand crank, old school, traditional cider press.
It is. It's, I think it's described as a basket press.
Okay.
And we have the garbage disposal. It is. It's mounted on a table, and it's positioned so that it shoots right into the hopper of the press. And then once you press your apples, you macerate them. It's ready to be pressed through the basket press and then goes right into the fermenter.
The garbage disposal is absolutely key, by the way. I learned that after a few years of not using them. Yeah. I mean, basically, if you're doing that by hand with a food mill, it takes hours longer, and it's a lot more manual labor. The garbage disposal kind of automates the whole thing, and it gets you a lot more juice out of the apples, too, and you end up getting a much higher yield per bushel with the garbage disposal.
Let's go back just one real quick second. So I mean, if you're going to make cider at home, you don't have to go through that entire process. The very basics of making cider is what?
Spit
in a jug of...
Spit and apple juice.
Right.
You can buy pressed cider just as easily from a green market. There's a lot of options in the city. You don't even need to go to a farm, I guess. I get a sort of a joy out of crushing them and doing the whole 9 yards. But really, all you need is to take apple cider, hopefully 100% unpasteurized apple cider, and add some kind of yeast or culture some kind of yeast from an apple, and then wait a few weeks, and then you've got some hard cider.
So, but like Welch's apple juice or like, commercial apple juice that is like from concentrate, would that work?
I've never tried it. I got a feeling it wouldn't work out too well.
I think it would probably work, but the quality of your product would be very different than using a fresh.
The fresher pressed, the better, basically.
Yeah,
and the more it's going to taste like you're biting into an apple.
Okay. So yeast, fresh pressed apple juice. Hopefully, non-pasteurized. You can do pasteurized.
Or you can get now I think some people UV pasteurize, which is a light pasteurization.
Sure.
I think that's the minimal for New York State standards. And I think, I've used that type of apple cider to make hard cider with and had very good results. I think you don't want to, you want to try to stay away from some hardcore pasteurization.
I think the cider apples that we're using are different than the apples that
Welch's
making.
Yeah.
The first part of the process for me is selecting the apples, and that's finding apples that aren't necessarily good for eating, but they're good for cider. So they have some tannins and they have a high sugar content.
So you sourced those apples, or did you order them, or how did you go about getting them?
I called around upstate different orchards, and I finally found one and developed a relationship with them. Good folks up at Soon's Orchard. Jeff's a great guy, and they're thinking about making cider in the future. They don't do it right now, but they're looking forward to maybe producing some cider themselves.
Cool.
Yeah.
And one thing I think about when we went over to Chris, it was great because he had a party. So we, a bunch of us showed up. I think it was like 8:30 or 9:30 in the morning. It's kind of early for a Saturday, Sunday morning.
It's like a brew day. You want to get an early start.
And, everybody pitched in. Like, there were two people chopping apples. There were two people feeding it into the disposal. There were people working the mill. Mm-hmm. So it was a great group activity.
Once the press broke, I have pictures of you standing inside the press and trying to use your body weight to do it, which just doesn't work as well. You don't yield as much, apparently.
Yeah, you have to make a party out of it. Because if you have two people to get through 8 bushels of apples, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work, and to get people involved and have a good time doing it is what it's about.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it was a ton of fun. I think that's a great thing for other homebrew groups around the country to do, or just, you know, groups of friends or whatever. Especially if you have, even if you don't have access, if you don't want to go the whole nine yards, you just want to start with the cider apples, I think it's still a good excuse to have a party. One thing, when Chris and I, so the juice that we got was mostly Macintosh, which doesn't have as much character. It's not a traditional cider. You wouldn't get as much character in your resulting cider as something like Chris Prout's sure. Apples will give. But that's why we chose to do these yeast experiments, because we figured, well, if we're not going to get as much apple character, we'll
it's a good do baseline. A
little, yeah, we'll do a little, experiments with the yeast instead. So I think that's another, direction that you can take. So there's a lot of things, don't think so narrow-minded. You don't necessarily, you can, juice and press your own apples. You can also start with the natural cider. So there's a lot of options here.
Can you hop cider?
I have done it before with wet hops.
Yeah,
you need to add a lot to really have that flavor come across, but you can get some aroma pretty easily. I think it's a really nice cascade wet hopping with cider is a really nice combination.
Ooh, that sounds good.
That sounds really fun too.
Yeah. So Chris, what inspired you in the first place to get this whole setup?
There was a fellow that came in the beer store where I work, and he was an English fella, and he would talk about the scrumpies in England all the time, mm-hmm. and how we need to investigate making cider there, and that's pretty much my start. This is the second season. The first season, I did a couple of wild fermentations, one with Brettanomyces, and then another with English cider yeast. So I had four different fermentations, and they're blended in this bottle that I brought.
Awesome.
I want to bring some out.
So blending at that end, when we were talking also that day, you had different kinds of apples, and you were doing single varieties, and then mm-hmm. you blend them at the end based on where you want your.
Sure. From what I understand, when you select an apple, depending on the season that the tree has, you don't know what you're going to get. Even from year to year, if you have a certain variety of apple, you don't know if it's going to be high sugar content mm-hmm. or high tannin, just because of the spring that it has or a late frost. It could be totally different. So I think what a lot of cider makers do, the pros, they blend to taste, because what you get after fermentation is not going to be the same year to year just because of the season.
Right.
And so you taste the ciders that you have, and you try to blend them together to make something that's delicious. It's good to drink.
And what was your approach to blending when you blended the cider that you brought today?
I think it was finding a balance, nothing too acidic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the second season, which I have as well, I have more acidity than I want, and I have to figure out a way to balance that, whether it's conditioning further, maybe bottle conditioning with the Brettanomyces, or to give a different layer.
Cool.
Yeah, cider is one of those things that really changes quite a bit with time, too. I mean, flavors mm-hmm. really develop over the course of a year. You can really see a lot of change. And if you don't like something, sometimes you can sort of put it in a cold place for a little while. Especially, speaking personally, I bottle condition everything, so time is really a huge factor in what you're getting out of the product.
Yeah, so we'd love to try Chris Prout's this blended cider.
All right. So, Ben, you grew up with apples, right?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I've got some family that live upstate, so we always used to we grow a lot of apples up there, and we always used to make applesauce in the fall. And we got our hands on a cider press a few years ago and made a sort of a batch of virgin cider. And I took 2 gallons of it and added some yeast, because that was right after I started homebrewing. And then now I'm at a point where I'm making about 12 gallons every fall, just special sort of weekend where I'm just doing that, as opposed mm-hmm. to balancing with brewing or something like that. But growing up, we always made these sort of applesauce or at the most an apple pie or something, but never nothing alcoholic.
when we were doing the sundae at Chris's, we were being very careful to not use any of the brown parts of the apple. Now, I know that in England and overseas, it's not necessarily that much of a concern. And friends who have visited places over there, what do you think about that, and how does that apply to applesauce?
Yeah.
Since we're here,
well, with in terms of brown spots, I've recently been reading a a couple of different sources that say that the English style, I guess, is to pick them, right. let them sit on the ground for about, mm-hmm. you know, 3 or 4 weeks covered in a tarp, mm-hmm. and then they start to slowly ferment, really, inside of their skins to soften up, and you bring up some more natural sugar that way, and then you chop them up and press them or whatever. So I did that this year with about half of the batch, but it wasn't the full batch, I think.
Sure.
This sort of true English style would be to pick everything and just let it sit on the orchard floor someplace and, you know, cover it with some kind of blanket so it doesn't get too exposed to the elements. But they're really letting them rot a little bit before right. you press them, which is a totally novel idea to me.
Yes, I think it's pretty awesome, yeah. They're pretty fun. Have you tasted that? Did it work out?
I don't know. I've never tried with the full batch. Well, yeah, but with letting it sit on the ground a little bit longer, it does improve it. I thought it made it much less sour.
Oh, interesting.
Well, we're going to take a break.
And we're going to come back and talk about back sweeten and all sorts of other fun cider stuff. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
True mom and pop operation since 2006, the Brooklyn Kitchen provides the tools that shape our food culture. They stock a curated variety of pots, pans, knives, small appliances, and other kitchen essentials. Their grocery department works closely with local farms and food artisans to bring you the tastiest fresh produce, dairy, and pantry items. Their teaching kitchens allow them to offer a wide breadth of cooking classes. From knife skills to pig butchering, from cooking for couples to pickling and canning, from home brewing to pie making, something new is always happening at the Brooklyn Kitchen. Visit them at 100 Frost Street in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, or visit thebrooklynkitchen.com.
Speaking of Brooklyn Kitchen, welcome back to Ferment About It. Mary, you are going to be teaching homebrew classes at Brooklyn Kitchen soon. Is that not the truth?
That's what it's looking like. Right. Yes, that's it's going
to
happen.
So if you want to come hang with Mary, learn how to homebrew one-on-one. Well, it's not one. Well, you know, 50-on-1. Sounds dirty, actually. I'm not even sure how I feel about this anymore. Never mind. You're not allowed. Don't go there, Mary.
We'll have more updates on that in future shows. Matt, back to cider. So we just cracked open Chris Proud's bottle of blended. This is from 2 years ago, you said, correct?
This is pressed in 2011. Then it was Northern Spy and Stamen Winesap varieties, as well as some unidentified Catskill apples. Two of the fermentations were natural fermentations, and one was with Britannomyces brusculensis, the bee strain, and one was with English cider yeast, the White Labs English cider yeast. So there's all four of these in this cider here.
Now, how long did you let these primarily ferment?
I would say
approximately.
It maybe like 4 or 5 months. Okay. Well, I mean, primary it zips through the yeast, the sugars immediately. I mean, but the conditioning time you need to wait on it a little bit because the sulfur sort of dissipates.
Okay.
After a while.
So after primary, did you rack these into actual secondary?
No,
you just left them, right?
Left them right on the primary. Yeah.
Okay. So 4 to 5 months, and you blended to your liking.
Blended. I did back sweeten with regular table sugar.
What's back sweetening?
Yeah.
And so typically, ciders or cider apples or fruit in general have a lot of simple sugars, and the simple sugars are very fermentable by any type of yeast. So what you have is a very dry, beverage, and the acidity in apples can be a little bit overwhelming. So if you have a dry, acidic beverage, it might not taste good. And so what you would do is back sweeten to round out the acidity and give it a little bit more complexity.
Back sweetening with what?
So you said you use table sugar. So did you heat it? Did you like boil it like you would a primary sugar, basically?
I put it in a solution, put it on the stovetop, made a simple syrup, brought it up to a boil so it's sanitized, and then add it into the keg that I blended, a 15-gallon keg that I blended all the 5-gallon batches into.
Okay.
Proportionally.
And then did you let that sit for a while, or... Did you
first? I did. I rolled it around and make sure it was in solution, and it got mixed up, and I bottled a couple of them after that, and this is the result of that.
Yeah, actually. This is delicious. So it's very, I judge ciders actually at a homebrew competition recently, but this is delicious. I think I would call it petulant because it's not flat. Mm-mm. It's not, definitely not sparkling, but it's got a nice level of carbonation. It's very balanced, decent amount of acidity, some tannins, but.
Is a flat cider ever appropriate?
Yes.
I think so, yeah.
Absolutely.
I had a cask cider during Cider Week that was practically flat. It was, I think it was from Crispin, maybe, but anyway, it was almost room temperature. It was, cask temperature. And it was barely discernible that it had any carbonation at all. And I liked it a lot. I mean, it was really mm-hmm. refreshing.
Have you guys ever made any apple wine from any pressings?
No, not yet.
Maybe ice wine, apple ice wine or anything?
I could have, yeah.
Ice cider.
Yeah, my shed this year, it got pretty cold this winter. There was a cold snap, and my kegs froze in my shed, and one of them was a cider keg, and I thought, well, should I just decant off the ice and just have some ice cider? But I didn't. I just thawed it back out.
These two ciders have very different mm-hmm. flavor profiles, and it's pretty fun. Do you think that this funkiness is from having laid those apples now?
Yeah, so what is it? Yeah, so yeah. Ben just poured us one of his ciders that he brought. So we will say the bottle was a gusher.
Yeah, it was definitely a gusher.
So Ben does a lot of bottle conditioning of your cider, and you say you're still learning about that. It's tricky because why is it tricky?
Well, this one, I mean, I should also say it might have gushed because I just hoofed it over from work.
Yeah.
So that might have
got a little shaken
problem,
up.
But, It's tricky in the sense that when you're bottle conditioning, you're depending on the fermenting yeast is going to stay in the bottle, but you're just going to add a little more sugar in right before you bottle to basically provide some carbonation. Usually when you're fermenting, all that gas escapes, but after you put the cap on it, it traps the gas into the solution, and you get carbonation that way. So obviously when you're back sweetening in the sort of traditional sense, you're going to add some sugar. But in order to do that, you have to remove the yeast so that the yeast won't eat that sugar.
Right.
So it's hard to remove the yeast when you need the yeast to carbonate. But with this cider, what I've done is in order to carbonate it, instead of adding like priming sugar or something like that, where you're trying to have a no flavor profile, this is with just some raw honey instead. So it gives it a little bit of a different flavor, which I liked a lot. And that's something I'm still experimenting with every year. Different batches, I'll carbonate with different types of priming sugar. So this was with honey. I also did some with maple sugar this year.
Right, yeah. I think I had that at one of the meetings, maybe.
Right.
So.
Usually I try to have them side by side to see how they're changing. And I've also done it with unfermented cider, which is a great result that way. But it's hard for me to do that because, like Chris was saying, it's like you kind of press your apples at one point, and then you have tons of cider on your hands. It's
right.
Not like you can necessarily press some and then have some on hand a month down the road.
Read recently that some people recommend if you're going to back sweeten, when you do the pressing, you save some of that juice and freeze it. And then once you're done with your primary fermentation, or once you're done with your primary or conditioning or whatever, and you're ready to back sweeten, then you thaw out a little bit of that cider,
and that's what you use to back sweeten.
This is delicious. So, Ben, these are very different ciders. They're both delicious. I think Ben, yours is a little more tart. It does
not back sweetened at all. Yeah,
it's not okay, and definitely acidic, but also very good. So, what varieties of apples did you use with this?
These are mostly Macintosh. And also, there's a couple of Northern Spy thrown in, but this is really kind of dependent on what we get every year at my family's place. So this year was better for Max than it was for Northern Spy. I think Northern Spy are a better cider apple, but this was kind of what we had to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all champagne yeast. So it's really, it's three ingredients, really.
Now, and you said you back sweetened this with?
No, this is not back sweetened.
You just primed it with regget with sugar?
No, with honey.
With honey, yeah. That's right, okay.
With just sort of raw honey. I think it was 2/3 of a cup for each 5 gallons. Yeah. Hmm.
So I haven't personally made very much cider. The biggest experience coming to mind right now is the little experiment that we did. And when you're talking about how, Chris, and you were saying you left stuff sit for 4 to 5 months, you know, ours sat for about 4 to 5 months, but I think it was a little bit too much and probably in conditions that were less than ideal. What temperature or what conditions would you want to give it?
I think that's true.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah.
No, okay, well, so we did a tasting. Yeah, because we did a tasting, and we do have a couple. I mean, we did a tasting of all 9 of them. I took notes here. And a few of them we do have, I don't know if we maybe got a Simisito-Bacter, but they have a slight acetone. But like Ben and Chris both said, if we condition them.
And blend.
Yeah, and blend, I think we'll be fine. So we'll plug in that third cooler, and we'll get those conditioning. Well, it's all going to work.
So what? Well, that's key too, though, keeping it at a temperate temperature.
Right. And what? If you have a lower temperature of fermentation, you definitely give your yeast a chance to work, as opposed to wild yeast that maybe aren't as, you know, the Acetobacter, which produces vinegar. You don't want to have apple cider vinegar. You want to have apple cider.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And it's just a touch. I mean, none of it is not. No, it doesn't drinkable. Overpower.
It's all drinkable, no doubt.
Yeah, so I think we're going to condition and we'll see what happens. But I think, I mean, the time I did it before, I also let them sit on the yeast for a long time. And mm-hmm. I mean, is that, how long are you letting yours go through primary?
Yeah, about 2 months. Yeah, okay. In the primary. And it's about in the mid-60s, upper 60s. But not in a cooler. I mean, it's in a cellar, so
right,
it's kind of
yeah.
sort of ambient. It does fluctuate a little bit.
And then do you condition yours afterward at a cooler temperature sometimes? Or
No, not really. I mean, I've never really experimented with that, sort of like a lagering step or something. Like, mm-hmm. I've never really tried that. But what I have learned recently is that with champagne yeast, the yeast sort of acts, it acts pretty fast. And I think part of the problem, or why I'm getting such sour or dry results, is that I'm letting it go a little too far. And if I just was, you know, if I cut it back by a gravity point or something like that, if I stop it a little bit sooner, and either cold crash it or something like that, you know, to just try and slow it down a little bit earlier mm-hmm. on, then I think I might have better results.
So you have more remaining apple flavor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, and more sweetness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the technique you were talking about earlier?
Just keeving.
Keeving.
Oh, keeving is a so the second pressing, when we had our cider pressing party when you guys were there, the press broke, and it's a wooden basket press. There's a threaded rod that comes down through a flange, and it stripped. Okay. And so we had no press. Mary tried to stand and on the press plate
and gallantly.
And fortunately, through Mary and Chris, I met Joy and Jeremy of Proper Cider, who are also in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm. They'll be our guests soon as well on Cider Part 2.
And they taught me about the French method of keeving, which is taking the cider off the yeast before it's finished completely, so that you do have some sweetness naturally, and you have a more balanced cider.
So you're basically racking the cider into a secondary vessel. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, I haven't really looked too far into it. But
yeah.
And that's so you don't have to back sweeten.
Not a rest fermentation. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense. So, Ben, tell us. So the cider that you just poured us, did that have some of the tart method, like aging?
Yeah. I let them sit. I didn't put them on the ground, I should say. I put them in these big bushel sort of galvanized tin baskets and put them outside in a garage covered. With planks of plywood. I mean, I didn't want them too exposed, but I wanted to see, you know, see how it came along. And after about 2 weeks, they were starting to soft up a little bit. I did chop off anything that was, you know, any dark marks, mm-hmm. anything.
Did you have any problem with fruit flies or anything?
No, not really. I mean, there was enough air getting in for some circulation, but it was covered with wood, so there wasn't really anything growing in there.
Living in the city, would you advise anybody to go to the market and try just getting a bushel of apples and throw them on their counter or in the bottom of a closet and do that?
No.
I
don't know. Unless you got a lot of space. I don't know.
Yeah, well, okay, that'd be true. Yeah, but you could probably do that. I mean, especially if you got some really nice, you know, nice fresh apples from the green market, especially if they were organic. You could undoubtedly. I mean, on a small scale level, I think you could do that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just to do some experiments.
If you were going to do it, yeah, and then you could use like some kind of food processor or something to press them like that.
Yeah,
that would be pretty interesting.
I mean, this is a good question. What, you know, how much liquid is yielded from an apple, or how many apples do I need for 1 ounce of liquid, or a pint of liquid,
With the basket press that I had, it was 2 to 2.5 gallons per bushel. But with the hydraulic press that Joy and Jeremy brought over, it was around 4 to 4.5.
Oh, wow. That's a huge
difference, man.
Oh, yeah.
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 And probably if you were doing a food processor at home, it would be even less than
the
basket press.
My yield is even lower than Chris's because I don't have that garbage disposal, which is really key. But yeah, you need a lot of apples to make cider from scratch, and it is a lot of work. I mean, it's easier when you have more people doing it, but we shouldn't gloss over that fact. It is some manual labor involved. Yeah.
But don't be afraid to, if you don't have access to a press, don't be afraid to go buy some nice, you know, the freshest you can get. I think support your green markets, your local farmers markets. Don't be afraid to ask the vendors, you know, how do they pasteurize? Oh, yeah. How do they do it? Where do they get their apples? What kind of apples are going in there? Definitely don't be afraid to do that. And I think, I mean, Chris and I will update you on our experiments, but we just did them in the gallon jugs.
Yeah.
So you don't need to have special vessels. And we tasted, so we had 5 of those different yeasts.
We deliberately did that for you. we can talk about doing it. It's going to be easy. We live in the city, just buy the jug and then just, you know, use
yeah, you can ferment
it
right in there. Process-wise,
it's a lot simpler than making beer in a lot of
absolutely.
Ways.
Absolutely.
I mean, really, and it's much less steep of a learning curve because
absolutely.
There's fewer variables.
I can attest to that for my high school experiment spitting in the jug.
Oh,
man.
Don't do that, though. So thank you for listening. I hope you guys have been inspired to make some cider. I know we're not in cider season right now, although I think there still is some fresh cider at the green markets, at least in New York. But definitely we will be doing at least one more cider show before the fall.
Come visit them at Brooklyn Bruisers meetings the first Monday of every month at Browery Lane in Greenpoint.
At 7 p.m.
And BrooklynBruisers.com.
BrooklynBruisers.com. Yeah. Hey, do you have any final do's or don'ts if people want to go hardcore on cider?
Mm-hmm. Do make cider.
Just do it.
Just do it and experiment.
It's fun and delicious. Yeah. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It.
On Heritage Radio Network. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.